This is Tridio Media, and I'm Father Roderick. It is a really nice spring or summer day. We're kind of in between the two seasons in Amersfoort, the Netherlands. And I'm sitting behind a microphone recording and streaming live to facebook.com/Tridio Media. From Star Wars to the sacraments, from technology to theology, this show features the cool and the classical, the past and the future, the trends and the tradition. Welcome to my show. And this show is brought to you free of advertisements, thanks to my patrons. And help me to continue to do this by joining them over at patreon.com/FatherRoderick. And patrons will get extra perks, more information on the Patreon page itself. And we have a new patron since last week, and that is Donald. So welcome, Donald. Thank you so much for supporting me with in my work. And also, I want to say a big thank you to departing patrons, Mike and Jewel. So every month we get some new patrons, we got some other people that for various reasons cannot continue to support me. And I want to acknowledge their help so far on the show as well. And with that, it is time for the news.
Do you know what's going on? This is what's happening in your world.
They said Catholics rule. We got Boston, South America, the good part of Ireland, and we're making serious inroads in Mozambique, baby.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
So I'm finally allowed to announce publicly something that I knew already for a couple of days, and that is that the Academy of Podcasters is pleased to announce, I'm reading this from their press release, the Hall of Fame class for 2018. The Academy has an open nomination process each spring where anyone can nominate qualified podcasters as potential entries into the Hall of Fame. And then the existing Hall of Famers vote on the nominations to determine that year's class. And I am one of the inductees. And so this was published on their own website. So there are a number of new additions to this Podcasters Hall of Fame. And under my name, I read Father Roderick van Heugen is a Roman Catholic priest from the Netherlands who works as a new media broadcaster and television presenter of programming related to Catholicism and pop culture. He's best known for starting the StarQuest Production Network, the leading Catholic podcasting platform in 2005, and as a host of The Walk and The Daily Breakfast. And of course, those of you that are listening to this know that since last week, this show is just simply called Father Roderick. So I'm very honored to be part of that Podcasters Hall of Fame. I'm one of the early podcasters, and I'm still doing it until today, of course, with the addition of many other forms of media. The ceremony, because there's an official, like an award ceremony, is in July the 24th. But it is all the way in Philadelphia, in Philly. I've been there twice before, and I don't know if I can go there. I mean, it's far away. I don't have any particular plans to go to the United States. It's also a little bit more tricky to get into the United States with all the new, you know, privacy stuff and let's say the border stuff is so complicated nowadays. You have to kind of tell them everything. Like, here are my passwords to all my social media channels, etc. So the United States right now doesn't really make you feel very welcome. But I love, of course, all my listeners and followers in the United States. But I'll have to think about it. And of course, you know, traveling all the way to Philly, I can't travel for free. So, well, we'll think about it. But nevertheless, I'm super excited about this news and about this honor. And what I love about this initiative is that it kind of gives podcasters their own moment of acknowledgement, because for a lot of like people in other media, I noticed that with my colleagues in television and radio as well, they tend to not take podcasting very seriously. It's like a hobby thing. It's like television people looking down on vloggers. They say, well, vloggers, oof, you know, who cares about vloggers? That's not serious television. Whereas a lot of these podcasters and vloggers have more viewers and listeners than regular shows have on you know, existing media like radio and television. So I think it's very good. It's kind of a sign of maturity of this platform. So kudos to all my fellow inductees to the Podcasters Hall of Fame. And with that, there is also a little bit of fantasy news. And I've got a nice fantasy-like jingle. It's like stuff that I read in the news, and I didn't know how to fit it into any of the other segments, so I'll create a little jingle for fantasy news. And this, to me, is perhaps the most exciting project, fantasy project, that we're looking forward to in the years to come. And that, of course, is the new television series based on the works of Tolkien, and more specifically, the Lord of the Rings works that Tolkien wrote. Now, we are all familiar with the books, of course, I hope. If not, stop this podcast, go read the books, and return. But what not many people, not all fans of the existing, you know, Hobbit book and the Lord of the Rings trilogy and the, well, it's not really, wasn't really meant as a trilogy in book form, but with the movies became a trilogy. What a lot of the fans don't know is that Tolkien later on started to write a lot of appendices in which he told a lot of backstory to the, let's say, the framework of the main story that he wanted to tell. And so we know that Amazon has invested heavily into the process of acquiring the rights to do a television show based on the world of the Lord of the Rings. And a lot of other people or companies were also trying to get those rights. It was finally Amazon that acquired the rights. And now we get some details bit by bit about what this television series will be about. Well, there was a new article on Unilad, which is, I think, a British site. And it gives us a little bit more news about this. The studio, apparently, Amazon, is now working with the Tolkien Estate and Trust, HarperCollins, I assume the publishers of the books, and New Line Cinema. This was news to me. New Line Cinema, of course, the studio that made the trilogy based on The Lord of the Rings. And the three, together with Amazon, will make this new series. And according to rumors, this is not confirmed yet, the series won't retell the story of the War of the Ring, but will be inspired by these appendices. So things that are part of the Lord of the Rings, let's say, universe, but were not included in the movies. So that gives them a lot of material to play with, because these appendices are pretty big. According to the rumors, the first season will reportedly focus on a young Aragorn. Following him as a ranger, he's of course fostered by Elrond in Rivendell, and he learns who he truly is, and he belongs to a royal bloodline. And of course, that's kind of what we see at the end of The Lord of the Rings, where he becomes king, or he's crowned a king. And he is part, you know, in many ways, the story of The Lord of the Rings is not just the story of the hobbits. That's what you immediately think of. But ultimately, I think it's the story of Aragorn and the adventures of the hobbits and the elves and the dwarf. That's all part of a much, much bigger story that focuses on Aragorn. So I'm super excited that they're going to explore that and that we'll get to see that. Now, it's also possible that Amazon is going to take a more of an anthology approach to this. So we've heard rumors that there will be 5 seasons. So for 5 years, we'll be enjoying this world of The Lord of the Rings. Sounds to me like a very kind of good duration. It's kind of similar to what they did with Game of Thrones, for instance. And for Amazon, this is clearly an attempt to create some kind of Game of Thrones type of blockbuster television series that will draw a lot of people to their service. So 5 seasons. The first season will be about Aragorn, but it may very well be the case that the second season, the third and fourth, fifth, will focus on other characters. Now, who will these characters be? Is it just going to be Aragorn? Are we going to see any hobbits? One thing that we know for sure is that Gimli will not be part, or at least the actor who played Gimli in the Lord of the Rings trilogies, John Rhys-Davies, he will not be part of this television series. He has denounced this whole project as being all about the money. Could also be that perhaps he was burnt a bit by his experience, as one of the main characters of the Chronicles of Shannara, which was also based on a famous fantasy series, and that show got canceled I think it only lived for two seasons. That's never a very nice experience. And, you know, perhaps that was also all about the money and not really caring much for the original books on which the story was based. Someone who we may actually see, at least if it's up to the actor, is Sir Ian McKellen, Gandalf, in both the Lord of the Rings trilogy and also in the Hobbit trilogy. He has said that, although they haven't approached him yet, he is absolutely in on playing Gandalf again. And he is very much combative when it comes to, you know, them recasting the role and letting someone else be Gandalf. He's like, well, you know what? Gandalf is, 7,000 years old. So I'm not too old to play Gandalf. I think it would be awesome if he could play Gandalf again. I have no problems. It's only logical that they recast, of course, Aragorn and perhaps some of the minor characters. But Gandalf, I have a hard time seeing anyone else playing Gandalf than Sir Ian McKellen. But we'll see. We'll have to wait and see. I'm super excited. I really wonder when they will start. Of course, there are no announcements yet about the director. There are some talks, again, according to rumors, with that Peter Jackson may be involved. But then, of course, you know, hiring all these famous people that could even make the whole production even more expensive than it probably already is. However, I think that they will invest, Amazon will invest $1 billion into this new TV series. So it had better be good. And with that, I think it's a nice transition to the world of movies and TV shows.
Like movies.
They're predictable. Like the guy gets the girl and that kid sees dead people and Darth Vader is Luke's father.
Not liking movies is like not liking puppies.
They're fine. I just get bored and never make it to the end.
You know, you need a movie education. You need a moviecation. I'm going to give it to you.
Well, I've seen the Solo movie for the third time, so it's not my fault that the movie doesn't do so well at the box office. It's kind of an interesting thing that's happening to Solo. The second weekend is showing signs that it's also going to be a pretty big nosedive in terms of visitor numbers, and so everybody is speculating about what may have caused this. I've asked the questions to my followers on Facebook, and I think the majority of people that reacted were like, it's too soon. We just saw The Last Jedi, which was a controversial movie, and not everybody was happy with the result of that movie. And so Solo, you know, another actor who plays Han Solo, perhaps it's not a must-see movie, and there are a lot of other movies that are also launched around this time, the summertime. And so for a lot of people, it's like, well, we can't go to the movies every single week. It's way too expensive. So that may be actually a bad strategy of Disney to release this movie only 5 months after the end of the run of The Last Jedi. If they've moved it to Christmas, it may have done much better. You know, I don't think it's the fault of the movie because it's a really entertaining, fun, really Star Wars movie. So highly recommend it if you haven't seen it already. But it's just a shame that it doesn't do better because the story itself lends itself to a sequel or more sequels. And of course, it also poses the question, is it a good idea to continue with these prequels? Because all these stories, as well as the television series, the animated series, and the new, you know, live action television series, they're all prequels to the story that we see in the current trilogy under development. And perhaps it's time for Star Wars to move into a new direction. Show us the future. Branch out. We've only been focused on these same 50 years all the time. And I know it's because that's what we're familiar with and Disney doesn't want to take any risks. But look at what they're doing with Marvel. Every story brings the entire mythology forward. It's almost you can't watch something like the last movie. What is it with Thanos? You cannot really understand what's going on if you haven't seen all the other movies that preceded it. And so they created like an addiction to this series. Star Wars, you know, you can totally watch the next Star Wars movie without having seen Solo. We already know what's going to happen to Han. So that may be something that Lucasfilm should and Disney should reconsider. especially now that they've announced that that there will be a movie based on the character of Boba Fett. There are also rumors about another Obi-Wan Kenobi movie. I think it's a bad idea, even though I would watch anything Star Wars. But Boba Fett, really? It's one of the most uninteresting characters that I've ever seen in the entire story. He's just a guy in a suit. And I didn't think the prequels told an interesting story about him and his father. It's kind of forgettable. Those prequels would have been perfectly fine without the addition of Boba Fett and Jango Fett. And now, yeah, I know that they played a certain role in kind of the Clone Wars series. But as a movie, I don't know. Apparently they hired the writer of the Logan, or the director of the Logan movie. So perhaps they're trying something new, but Boba Fett, really? It may actually come across as yet another movie that people will say, well, you know what? Yeah, that's fine, but I don't need to see that. I'm not in. So they're taking risks. And I wouldn't be surprised if they are going to reevaluate all those plans. So in a way, this may be good for Star Wars. Maybe an extra incentive for Disney to do better than they're already doing. Because I'm pretty happy with the state of Star Wars. But perhaps they can do even more, even better. Another movie that I saw on DVD, no, on, did I see it on DVD? On Blu-ray, I have the Blu-ray, was an old movie. It brought back so many memories. The Never Ending Story. It's a German movie that is dubbed in English. And even some of the music is different in the Americanized version compared to the German original. You remember the old-fashioned, probably a lot of you weren't even born when this movie was made, but you had the hit song, The Never Ending Story. It was like an 80s song. That was only added to the English version to kind of give it a bit more of a blockbuster appeal. The German version has totally different music. And also the dubbed voices are so different in the English version. So on my Blu-ray, I can switch between German and the American dubbed version. And the German version sounds very strange to me because I'm so used to the English version. It's a good movie, though. It's kind of feels, has a bit of that Willow vibe. A lot of those movies in the late 80s, fantasy movies, were all done with practical effects and puppeteers, etc. Think of The Dark Crystal, Labyrinth. This is a much easier story to follow, but it has some pretty dramatic moments that I did remember, but I didn't remember how traumatic those moments were. Like, the main character of the story has a horse, and the horse drowns in the swamp, and it's like, I can't believe they put that in a children's movie. It's like, I was like, oh my gosh, I totally forgot that the horse didn't make it. And man, I pity the children that watch this in the movie theater. I don't think they would do that nowadays. But it's a pretty good story. And if you have the ability to rewatch it, don't hesitate. It's good to see how well movies like that were done in the 80s. And then a final tip for those of you that have access to Netflix. It's a fun series called The Toys That Made Us. And the first episode of the second season is about Star Trek toys. And it brought back to my memory a frustration that I remember as a kid. And that is that sometimes they would slap the Star Wars and Star Trek logos on toys that had nothing to do with the television series. And the worst example of that is a stupid helmet, which was developed just as a regular sci-fi tool, a toy for kids. And then Star Trek started to license the franchise to toy makers, and they slapped a Star Trek logo onto the helmet. And it's a stupid, goofy-looking helmet with a red lamp on top of it, and they call it the Spock helmet. It's like, it's a con. It's like you betrayed a trust of children by trying to sell them stuff that has nothing to do with Star Trek. And by thinking it's just, well, we'll just put the logo on it and people will buy it. It's exactly what they did with Star Wars as well, and some other television franchises as well. They just put, they had stupid toys, and then they made people buy it. And my mom would fall for that. And even you would have these imitation things. It wouldn't be called Star Wars, but it was like, War Stars or something like that. And my mom was like, I bought you a Star Wars toy. And it's like, Mom, this is not Star Wars. This is War Stars. And then my mom was like, well, that's almost the same. It's like, no, it's not. I'm in a way, I'm glad that nowadays the rules and around these licensed products are a little bit more tight and that the studios actually kind of supervise the toy makers. Also has a downside in that it's sometimes the toys nowadays are a little bit boring, especially the more recent Star Wars toys. I mean, look at the Star Wars Lego. It's all a bit bland. The ships are bland. The minifigures are kind of the same. And I'm not surprised to hear that Lego actually had a hard time selling these newer Star Wars Lego sets, because they're very expensive. And it's a lot of it is just a rehash of much better Star Wars sets that we've seen in the past. I mean, yeah, the Millennium Falcon is cool to see the solo version of that. But if you already have the original Millennium Falcon, why would you buy that newer one? Especially because it's like super expensive. So, I don't know. There too, perhaps bad sales, just like with the movie Solo, maybe an incentive for toy makers to be a bit more creative in the future. So every downside has an upside, as a famous soccer player in the Netherlands used to say. Let's visit the Peculiar Bunch.
Catholics rock!
And here at the Peculiar Bunch, we always take some time to talk about the strange, mysterious, and sometimes really interesting world of Catholics and their faith.
Catholics can be a peculiar bunch. No meat on Friday.
No meat? What do they eat, light bulbs?
Last week, I talked a bit about the difference between a cathedral and a basilica and a chapel and a church. Today, I just want to share some stuff that's going on in my own life as a priest.
Man, you guys got more crazy rules than Blockbuster Video.
Because things are changing in this neighborhood. I think I've already shared with you that my current parish, which covers about 5 churches where we celebrate the Eucharist on a regular basis, we have one pastor and I'm the assistant priest, and then we have a few lay people and a permanent deacon. We lose our pastor. He's moved to another city and we don't get a replacement for him. Instead, the diocese has decided to merge the pastoral team of this parish with the neighboring parish, where there are 2 priests. There's one pastor and there's a young priest from Colombia. And the two are going to work in my parish as well. So that's going to change a lot. It's making the entire parish so much bigger. It's formally, of course, we'll still have 2 separate parishes, but with one shared team, kind of makes sense that we will be working almost everywhere. And this is a big, big area. So to go from one church to another, it could take you as long as 45 minutes by car. So I'd like to have a TARDIS or a helicopter or a Millennium Falcon. You know, anything. We need different vehicles to go from one place to another. But it is going to change. What I do like is that I will have 2 international colleagues, because the pastor of the neighboring parish is from Poland. And he's been working in the Netherlands as a missionary for many, many years. Great guy. The other priest is a missionary from Colombia who came here. Still a young guy. He did his internship in my parish. And now he will also be helping the rest of us with all these different churches. And so we're going to have to reorganize things and also kind of plan ahead of, because we have a current situation, but we have a lot of churches. Now, in total, we will have 12 churches where we will celebrate on a regular basis. But then we only have 3 priests. So how are we going to do that? It's going to be very, very interesting. Then something else that I did last week after recording this podcast. On Sunday, I went to Maastricht, which is a beautiful city in the south of the country, where they had one of the biggest European religious or Catholic festivals that I know of, which is a big celebration around the sarcophagus or the remains of a great saint from the 4th century, if I'm not mistaken, Saint Servatius. And Saint Servatius died probably around the year 384, was one of the people that brought the gospel to our place, to our area, especially to the southern part. And his remains are still kept in the Basilica of Maastricht. And every 7 years, there's a massive, massive event. Its festivities take about a week. And on two Sundays, there is this huge procession where people from all neighboring parishes come to the big city of Maastricht, and they're all dressed up like ancient biblical figures, or they will have their own guilds and whatnot. And it's a tradition that goes back to the Middle Ages, and a lot of the vestments and the traditions are straight from the Middle Ages. It's an incredible spectacle. Now, of course, a lot of the people that are watching this have no idea about the history underneath all these religious expressions. So there's definitely a lot of work to do into making sure that people understand why this is important. And I was there to film for my TV show. I was doing interviews in the streets. I don't think I've ever filmed walking backwards as much as that Sunday, which was quite hard because I was filming, I was interviewing, I was walking backwards, and the temperature was about 30 degrees Celsius. So I was melting. It was so hot. But I'm super happy with what I've been able to film, and we're going to put that together for one of the first shows of the new season. It was a lot of fun, but also I'm glad that I also have normal Sundays, because it wasn't really a resting day for me. And with that, I think it is time for some tech.
We are on the cutting edge of technology.
Wow. Well, what does that mean?
Plug it in. It's going to say, hey, I see you plugged in a new device, and it's going to load in the appropriate drivers. You'll notice that this scanner built,
Well, all your technology stuff, it just ends in disaster.
But there is one more thing.
Well, there's definitely always one more thing to talk about from the world of technology, and today I'm going to give you my review, as promised, of the Oculus Go. Now, for those of you that haven't listened to previous episodes, the Oculus Go is a VR headset that has been developed by Oculus, one of the first companies that wanted to make a consumer product. Of course, the more expensive product they first developed was called the Oculus Rift. And then they were acquired by Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg was sensing that this could become perhaps one of the biggest new ways for us to communicate in the future. We're not there yet, but now everybody is using Facebook on their mobile phones. And he was already thinking about the next step. Perhaps in the future we'll all be wearing goggles, or perhaps the images will be projected straight onto our retinas and we'll have chips in our brains. But he wanted to have a company that would be able to make that transition to future technologies. And that's why at one point they developed the Oculus Go, which is kind of like the Rift, uses a lot of the technology that is also integrated in the Rift, but there's one big difference. You don't need a supercomputer to run this. The Oculus Rift, just like the PlayStation VR, are headsets that are connected to a device, be it your PlayStation or your computer. You need to have a good graphics card. You need to have sensors that track your movements, both in the goggles and in some cases also sensors in the room. Whereas the Oculus Go was developed as a standalone headset, it has a lot of the mobile phone technology. You know, you'd have the Google developed headsets made out of carton, basically, and you would slide in your phone, and it would use the technology and also the motion trackers in your phone to deliver a virtual reality experience. What Oculus did was to take that same technology, take out the phone, and use the phone processor and the screen that normally would be part of a mobile phone and optimize it for just a VR device. And the result is stunning. I have had the PlayStation VR It was great to play games, but it's big, it's bulky, it's got a big wire that connects you to the PlayStation. If you want to move your hands, you need to have these controllers with ping pong balls with LEDs in them. And so even though it's absolutely superior technology, it doesn't have the ease of use of the Oculus Go. You put this on your head and you're in this virtual world. It connects to the internet, has very nifty integrated speakers, and they are integrated in the hat straps. It's very well designed, and the quality is amazing. Of course, since this only has a mobile chipset and not the fastest one, it's kind of old technology, you can't play like very graphically intense games, but there is already a massive library that has been developed for the Samsung phones that are compatible with the Oculus Go. So you've got hundreds of experiences. I wouldn't call them games because a lot of them are, even the games are relatively short, but it does do a very good job of immersing you into the world of VR. And the fact that it has no wires, that you put this on your head and you are in this world, and there is the setup and the ease of use is so incredibly well thought out. This is the device that I use on a daily basis. Whereas the PlayStation VR, which is much more powerful, enables you to play Skyrim and Fallout and whatnot, that was something that I would only use, you know, every month or so. It was gathering dust. Whereas this one is constantly, I keep it on the charger, and then I'm using this thing at least an hour a day. It comes with a nice little remote control. And it's all very simple. It's not six axes 3D. So if you lean forward, you don't get closer to the objects that are projected. But you don't need that. A lot of the experiences are designed in such a way that you can just, it's enough to see a 3D world, to be able to move your head up and down and left and right and look behind you. That all works very well. There's some fun games that I tried out. There is a roller coaster game that is amazing, where you just shoot at things along the track. It's almost as if you're in Disneyland or Disney World. It feels like something that is a bit like, I don't know, the what is it, the mountain ride, or there is this Toy Story ride, at least in Disneyland Paris, that is very akin to what you see in this one. I also have a game that is a kind of a virtual, like a science fiction shooter, where you are in a spaceship shooting at other players, and it works really well. There's only one game that is missing in action, and I can't wait to see it coming to the Oculus Go, and that is Minecraft. There is no Minecraft yet for the Oculus Go, and that could be the absolute killer app. Because this is a very affordable headset, it's $200. It's a little bit more in euros, 220 for the 32 gigabyte version, but it's worth every penny. And so, you know, it's only the beginning. This technology will get better over time, and I'm pretty sure that the Oculus Go is already one of the best-selling virtual reality headsets out there. It may actually sell way more goggles than PlayStation. And PlayStation currently with PSVR is leading the pack, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Oculus Go will sell even more. And that, of course, is good for the entire industry. And since we're already on the topic of games, well, let's talk games for a second.
The humanoid must not escape.
Remember this jingle? I think I made this jingle more than 10 years ago, and I was using it regularly on the Daily Breakfast, and, well, I think it's time to bring back a gaming segment. Some people told me that they missed Geek Week and some of the other shows that I used to do in the past. Well, you know what? If you listen to this one, you get all of those old shows concentrated into one show. So we're bringing back a games segment because I've been playing a lot of fun games recently. And I've been initiated by my two nephews and my one niece when I was babysitting them this past week on Wednesday. My sister and her husband went for an evening out. And so my sister has finally finished her treatment for the cancer that she had. So the radiation therapy is now over, and her hair is coming back. And so she wanted to go out with her husband. And so I was, as an uncle, I was babysitting the kids. And they showed me, the two youngest showed me Minecraft. And nowadays you can play Minecraft on your phone. So I installed it on my phone, and my niece had created her own world. And the two of them were playing on their own tablets. And I was also jumping in and looking around and being amazed at what these kids nowadays can do in this kind of Lego-esque world of Minecraft. It's a ton of fun. But I'm waiting for this to go VR. And the other game was played by the oldest, and I heard about this game, hadn't really tried it out, thinking it's probably not for me. It's Fortnite, and then Battle Royale. This is the most popular game in the world. All the teenagers are playing it, and it's also causing a lot of problems. I've heard from so many people, including from my sister and her husband. They're like, Jonathan is playing this day and night. He shows signs of being addicted to it. At least they're afraid that this is an addiction, and so are a lot of other parents. I always try to reassure them. I've played tons and tons of video games, and I think I was much more addicted to games than these kids are, and kind of ended up all right, at least relatively all right. The big difference between the video games that I played as a kid and a game like Fortnite Battle Royale is that nowadays these games are social. So you can team up with your friends, and you can play together, and you have to work together and communicate, which I think in itself is just another way of playing games. And then people are worried about, well, but they're shooting at each other. Well, you know what? Fortnite is a cartoon world. There is no blood. It's not gruesome or anything. Yes, you shoot at each other, but it is more like a game of tag. You know, when we were playing in outside, we would tag each other, and this is kind of the same. You try to take out your opponents by tagging them with your cartoon gun. It also has some elements of Minecraft in there. You can gather wood and other materials and build fortresses to protect yourself. And so the premise is you're flying above an island. You jump out, you land somewhere, and there is a big purple storm that is getting closer and closer. So there's this circle that makes the playing area smaller and smaller time after time. And so the players are trying to take out each other, and this is about the last man or last gal standing. And the smaller the circle gets, of course, the more difficult it is to hide or to protect yourself. Well, I played this live on Facebook the other day, and I had a ton of fun. I was like, I can totally understand why kids play this. And I was super proud, and it's probably because I'm being lured into this game as well. I made it to the 12 last remaining players on my first try. So, well, actually my second try. I was killed after 5 seconds in my first try. But then the second time I played this, out of 100 people, I was the 12th one standing. And I was feeling pretty good. And it's like, well, hey, I got to try this again. So it's a lot of fun. I got someone forwarded me an article. I'm trying to find. Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes. There's a very good article about parenting kids that play Fortnite. Because for a lot of parents, it's kind of an issue. How do we deal with this? When do we say enough is enough? This was a very balanced, good article about how to do that, how to deal with kids that are very much into Fortnite. My general advice would be don't panic. Talk with your kids. Also, stay parents. You know, you have to set the rules and make sure that they get enough physical movement and that when it's time to do your homework or go to bed, you know, that's a fixed barrier. But don't go like breaking up a game in the middle of a game. That's so frustrating. But instead say, well, this is going to be the last game. And you know that it's not going to, you know, the game can end within a minute, or, you know, might take 20 minutes. So just make sure that you have boundaries, but don't overdo it. And don't see everything as a menace. I would say that in general to parents. All right. And with that, I think we've talked about games. What else have we got left? I think we need to talk about science. Why not?
The scientifically wonderful world of science.
What sort of science?
Welcome back, science friend.
Well, I always like to talk about science, and there was some interesting astronomy news recently. And this is about the dwarf planet Ceres. I never get used to the American pronunciation of these names. Ceres. It's a small dwarf planet that is floating around in between our planets, part of the asteroid belt. And but it has the size of a planet. It's round. It has gravity. And we have sent a probe on its way to Ceres to take pictures. And it is the plan that this Dawn probe, it's called Dawn, will end up in an orbit super close to the surface of Ceres. About 30 miles, 50 kilometers. That's insanely close to the surface. Now, Ceres, if you see the photos, at first glance, it just looks like a moon. It's got, you know, craters and stuff. It's gray. Kind of boring. Why would they send a probe? Well, you know what? Remember that a while ago, I think more than a year ago, they discovered these very bright, almost luminescent, like, bright spots. And it was like, what is this? It looks like big lights. Is it a city? Could it be, I don't know, extraterrestrial life? And then the more Dawn got closer, the more they started to see and conclude that this is actually what we're seeing is ice. This is white water ice. And the one of the biggest spots, because there are tiny little spots all over our series, has an indentation, so you can see that it's coming from a hole, and then it has a protrusion in the middle of the bright spot. And that shows that it is probably water that is being pushed to the surface, and in contact with the low temperatures, it forms ice crystals, and it solidifies. And what they've noticed is, while they are observing Ceres, is that these shapes, these spots, are changing shape. Are changing color, which some of scientists now are thinking that underneath the surface of Ceres, there may actually be an ocean. And there may be still water that is moving. There must be energy that is pushing that water up. And if there is energy, it means there may be heat. If there is heat and there's water, there may be life. It's super interesting. And so in a while, we'll have this probe circling this dwarf planet and telling us more about what's actually going on underneath the surface. This is why I love science. This is why I love astronomy. You'd think that we've seen what there is to see in the universe. We've gone as far as Pluto, which now, according to the latest theories, consists out of thousands and thousands of asteroids that together formed this amazing planet, because I keep calling it a planet, because it's one of the most interesting objects that are floating around our sun. And but there is always more to discover. And what makes Ceres so interesting is that it is kind of like a fringe object. We have the inner planets, you know, Mars being the last one, and then you've got the bigger ones, and you know, Jupiter and Saturn and those big gas giants and the colder planets. In between is Ceres, and there is definitely, it looks cold, it looks dead, but there is life, or at least it's a metaphor. There is something happening on the inside. I can't wait to find out more. And with that, I think it is time for a short book review. Yeah, well, let's books. Where's my jingle for books? There it is.
When did you become an expert in thermonuclear astrophysics?
Last night. The packet. The extraction theory papers. Am I the only one who did the reading?
Well, I'm reading a new book, which is super interesting. One of the challenges that we're facing with Tridio is now that we have all our equipment in place, I have my green screen studio. If you're watching this live on Facebook, you'll see the Shire projected behind me, Bilbo's house. We've got the audio equipment set up, even though I'm still kind of trying to figure out how to have a better situation with a mixer and stuff. There are a lot of was way too much cable spaghetti behind the desk. But we have all that in place. We are producing these monthly documentaries. And if you haven't watched Galaxy of Friends yet, then I invite you to go over to our YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/Tridio Media and watch those this four-part documentary. I'm super excited that I finally got to do my Star Wars documentary. And I try to talk about Star Wars and go beyond just Star Wars and talk about, you know, why is this franchise affecting us so much? What are the values in Star Wars? And I also connected it with my own personal religious history. Go watch it, Galaxy of Friends. The next month, we're going to produce my documentary series based on the footage that I shot with my phone during my Camino de Santiago. 40 days from Lourdes to Santiago and even beyond to Finisterre and to Muxia. I've only shown like half of the journey in the documentary. You'll be able to see the entire trip. But we all have all that in place. But what good is it to make good shows and nobody knowing that you do that? So our next step is marketing. Is how can we improve our marketing? How can we improve our tools, and perhaps we need to find people that can help us do this and reach the audiences that would like to see this but just don't know that we do these things. And in that context, I'm reading a book called Building a Storytelling Brand. It's written by, I'm trying to find the link, where do I have that? Building a Story Brand, by Donald Miller. I bought this when it was on sale on the Amazon Kindle store. And I'm already learning. I'm only halfway through the book. But what I like is that he doesn't start by teaching you techniques, but instead he tries to help you tell the story of what you're doing, the story of your company, in our case, the story of Tridio. What will you, if you would summarize what you do for your audience, what would that be? What is the story? And then don't tell the story of how it came about. That's boring. Nobody cares. But what is your story? With what story are you going to tell people that it's worth, you know, watching your shows, listening to your podcasts? In my case, it would be, I think, we help you find love, faith, and faith, love, and hope. And we tell stories that show other people that are finding love and faith and hope in their own lives. And that hopefully will inspire you too. And we do that on the crossroads of you know, ancient stories and traditions, as well as geek and pop culture. And so I hope that I'll be able to formulate this in an even more enticing way, because this still sounds kind of boring. So that's what I'm studying. In other book news, I got a very surprising letter the other day from Franciscan Media, and they are the publishers of my first and only book that I've written, Geek Priest. And they are telling me that they have concluded the publishing run of this book. And so they are giving me back the rights to the entire manuscript. And I'm very, very excited. Over the years since I wrote that book, they've been selling this all over the world. But they're not going to reprint the book, which means that I can now refresh the book and update it with the chapters that I wrote for the Dutch version of Geek Priest, which was, I think, a much better book, much more mature. I've rewritten almost all the chapters, and there are a lot of newer stories that hadn't happened yet when the first book was written, and I can now self-publish Geek Priest. So still, of course, I have to think about how to do that and where to find the time, but I am very excited. I never expected to get the rights back. In my contract for my Dutch book, there were like limitations on how long the publisher could publish that book, and then the rights would automatically get back to me. For my American publisher, I did not put that in a contract. So I actually thought that I'd lost those rights forever. Well, turns out that's not the case. I've got the rights back, and I am going to work on a new version of Geek Priest, because I love to tell these stories, and there are so many things that I want to share with people, and hopefully it can help them, give them, by giving them ideas on how you can integrate modern culture in transmitting the faith. So that was an unexpected but very, very cool little news factoid this week. And then finally, I want to share with you, I don't have a jingle for that. I have this one, a little bit of music. Very simple music, because I want to talk a little bit about minimalism. You know, that's a thing for me. Over the past few years, I've been trying to declutter, getting rid of things that I just gathered but never used. And the trick is always to not only declutter and get rid of stuff, but also to try to resist the urge of buying new stuff. And the other week, I had a very difficult test. It was an online store. And they had something so cool that was on sale. Actually, two devices. One was the remote-controlled Sphero R2-D2, and it was half price. So instead of 140 euros, it was only 75 euros, including shipment. I was like, oh, I want that. I want that. I want that. I want that. So I filled in all my data, filled in my credit card number, and then I was like, well, wait a minute. Do you really need it, or do you just want it? And what happened to your little BB-8, your Sphero BB-8? You played with it a couple of days, and now it's gathering dust. So do you really need that R2-D2? Or is it also going to gather dust over time? So I decided not to press the button. The other device that they had on sale was the Google Home. And the Google Home, I'm a Google guy. I have my watch, I can speak to my watch, I can speak to my Google app. I can have my music play over the speakers, thanks to the Google, what is it, the Google Cast, Chromecast. But I didn't have a Google Home. And so, again, I filled in all my data, and then I read, oh, Google is bringing these devices to the Netherlands, in the, you know, somewhere in quarter three or four. So I did not press that button. So twice I resisted new clutter, and I resisted something that I wanted but didn't really need. So I was proud of myself. Just wanted to share that with you. Of course, I'm trying to keep myself to gather the courage to keep strong. And with that, I think we've come to the end of this episode of my podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to my patrons for supporting me. And my patrons will also have another podcast this week to download. It's part of their perks. If you are a patron, you get access to the after show, which I record straight after I've recorded the episode that you're currently listening to. I'm heading out. I will see you next week. Have a wonderful time, and thanks for listening. Talk to you soon. Take care, and God bless.